the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
Well, here we are, heading through January, the month, of course, named after the Roman god of two faces, looking forwards and backwards. And we might be looking backwards and thinking, well, maybe our nutrition wasn't necessarily at its best over the festive period. Certainly that would seem to come across from our general concerns about gut health. And so we're delighted to actually welcome to the programme today to actually talk a bit more about gut health and a fabulous new partnership with respect to Marks & Spencer's and a personalised nutrition science company called Zoe. The person we're delighted to welcome, of course, is nutritionist extraordinaire and indeed somebody who can actually give good advice all days of the year. That's the wonderful Rebecca Brown, senior nutritionist at Marks & Spencer. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm well. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, it's only right that we start our 2024 in the right way. And that's something which I suppose, given the prevalence of social media, TikToks, YouTubes, et cetera, there's an awful lot of misinformation that's actually out there when it comes to our gut health, isn't there?
There is, and there is actually lots of valuable information online and on social media, but there is a real danger when people are solely getting their nutrition and health advice from social media, and especially the younger generation, which are, you know, more prevalent on TikTok and follow hashtags such as gut talk. And actually, a survey that was launched from the British Nutrition Foundation just yesterday showed that over half of the people who receive health and nutrition information online are likely to make changes to their diets as a result of this. So it's really important that people know where to go for their health and nutrition advice to make sure that it's scientifically backed, that it's credible and it's evidence-based. And there's lots of different places that people can go to receive this information. For example, the British Nutrition Foundation website is a great resource to go to. And there's lots of information also available on our website. And of course, our new partner, Zoe, as well.
Gut health should really be regarded as being for life, not just for the festive period. In terms of ensuring that we are aware of the importance that actually the fuel that we're consuming, how it's absorbed by all the microvilli and the ileum and the duodenum, et cetera, why is that such an important part of our general well-being?
So gut health is a really exciting and emerging area of research. And it's actually only in the past couple of years that we've seen it become a little bit more mainstream. And a survey that we conducted showed that of our own customers, 76% were aware of the concept of gut health. But despite this, only 39% actually had a good understanding of exactly what gut health is and were confident in understanding exactly how it can impact our health. And gut health is so important, especially we know that, you know, 2024 will hopefully really be the year of gut health. Because your gut health can really influence lots of different things in your health. It can impact your metabolism, your immune system, and even brain health as well.
Have people over the years very much been into this whole notion of, right, it's January, we'll start a New Year's resolution, etc. And then whilst they might have actually thought a little bit about gut health, as you mentioned, by the time it's got round to February, it's been a case of, oh, what the hey, let's just go to something completely different. I mean, is this a partnership which will hopefully sort of ensure that the maintenance of good gut health will be a year-round and indeed lifetime-based change?
Absolutely. As you said, gut health is not just a fad. It's really something that we need to understand for the rest of our lives. And the best thing about this partnership is that, you know, Zoe's mission is to improve the health of millions. And it's really an opportunity for us to bring science to more people and inspire the nation to kickstart their gut health journey. And with any New Year's resolution, I would always recommend not to make any huge drastic changes, but just to introduce things really easily into your diet. So for example, for gut health, if you want to improve your gut health, there's studies that show that introducing fermented foods into your diet just a little bit every day could help to improve your gut health. And the M&S and Zoe Gut Shot that we've launched is a fermented food. It's a fermented milk. So it could be perfect for those who are wanting to introduce it to their diet.
And I wanted to move on to the M&S and Zoe gut shot. I mean, it sounds fairly dramatic. Presumably, it's not quite as dramatic as it seems, although it could have a dramatic effect on our gut health.
Yeah, so the M&S and Zoe gut shot is just one of the ways that we hope we can inspire people to improve their gut health. And we really believe that it's our ultimate gut shot. So as you said, it's made in collaboration with Zoe, which was co-founded by Professor Tim Spector. It's got 5 billion live cultures from 14 different strains of bacteria, and it's packed with fiber as well to support your gut health.
Yeah, you see, 5 billion. I mean, I'm not sure I could even sort of count to that sort of scenario from that point of view. Seems a phenomenal number. But presumably, again, all backed up by authentic scientific research courtesy of Zoe.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of this partnership is that we've really merged the trust and quality that people would expect from M&S with this real scientific expertise that Zoe have and nearly a decade of research and scientific expertise that they have. So it's really been a joy to work on over the past year.
And in terms of your own advice for people who are maybe listening to this and thinking, you know, I really should actually start considering looking after my tummy and such like stuff, what sort of tips would you actually provide?
Yeah, so there's lots of different things that you can do to improve or support your gut health. Fermented foods is one of them, but a really nice message that you can think about to increase the fiber in your diet is to have 30 different plants a week. And 30 you might sound like quite an overwhelming number to
It
some
sounds a
people.
lot bigger than 5 a day, shall we say?
It does. So the 5 a day message is still really important. But new emerging science shows that people who eat 30 different types of plants a week can have a healthier gut. And it doesn't just include fruits and vegetables, it also includes herbs, spices, grains, pulses, and even coffee. So whole foods that are really based on plants. And it also includes different colours of vegetables and fruits as well. So if you pick up a bag of peppers that's got a red, green, and yellow pepper in there, that's three different plants. So there are lots of kind of nice ways that you can improve the plant diversity of your diet by eating 30 a week.
And would you advise people to actually, if they are concerned at all, actually seek out the advice of a sensible, scientifically trained nutritionist such as yourself, Rebecca, before they suddenly turn around and say, "Oh, I'll just try and eat that," because obviously we can take stuff in, it can have a very dramatic reaction, which is not the kind of reaction we're looking for, really.
Yes, so generally, I would encourage people to try some fermented foods in their diet and just in generally increase the fiber in their diet and eat lots of wonderful fruits and vegetables. But if you are making any drastic changes to your diet, I would definitely recommend speaking to a registered health professional or medical professional.
And finally, Rebecca, where can people go to find out further details about this Marks and Spencer Zoe partnership? Or is it just a case of just go to your local Marks and Spencer store?
So people can find out more about this partnership and about the M&S Zoe Gut Shot by visiting our website. And in our M&S stores, there's also a free gut guide, sorry, a free health guide available, which has lots of healthy tips in there for the new year. And of course, you can visit the Zoe website as well for lots of scientifically backed and credible information.
Rebecca Brown, Senior Nutritionist at Marks and Spencer. Huge thanks and happy Gut New Year, Rebecca.
Happy Gut New Year.
One of the acronyms that we've used regularly on Siren Radio over the years is that of TREAT. Terrible results eating all that sugar. And clearly, that is one of the classic cases that we actually have, with most of us, indeed over a third of us, actually admitting that they're eating far too much sugar and indeed have a sugar addiction. So, how do we actually cope with this? How do we actually ensure that we can actually ditch this addiction? Well, we're delighted to welcome an ace nutritionist to share some thoughts about this. It's the wonderful Madeline Shaw. How are you, Madeline?
I'm really good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm okay, but as I say, that whole notion of terrible results eating all that sugar, treats, and so on, it's something which seems to be ingrained in us. And even Mary Poppins back in the day would be insisting we should take a spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down. I mean, have we all been brainwashed over the last century that sugar is actually wonderful for us, whereas effectively it's the new nicotine?
Yeah, I think, the problem is that sugar's just come into all our different types of foods. I think you know, when we eat cake or chocolate, we know it's in there. But I think it's now in our breads, it's in our pasta sauces, it's in our yogurts. And the problem is it's kind of moved into all our food. So we're just used to food being sweet all the time. You know, even fruit and vegetables have been like genetically modified to be more sweet. So we will eat them. So I think we've just got a bit used to that sort of sweetness in our diets consistently. And that's kind of led to this addiction. So research done by Kombucha Brand Remedy have shown that over a third of people are addicted to sugar. So there's a lot of people really finding this quite difficult.
Has it become more dangerous than salt? Because I know a few years ago people used to panic about salt and how that would cause blood clots and all sorts of other challenges. Is sugar actually really at the heart of this obesity crisis and more in terms of poor health?
Definitely. I think it's a huge factor in fueling obesity. I think that, you know, often this is like something that we're consuming even without realizing it. And it does cause a lot of weight gain. It causes these big dips in our energy levels at like 11, 10, 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. It can disrupt our sleep cycles. It can make us feel quite jittery. It can cause bloating. So it definitely has a lot of negative impacts on our diet. And I think it's just that we're eating it in excess. You know, a small amount is absolutely fine, but I think it's just sneaking into every meal that we're having.
There are listeners who probably will be taking part in Dry January and say, well, we're being very virtuous, we're not having any alcohol, etc. But I was interested to see that actually reducing your alcohol intake can actually lead to a heightened sweet tooth. I mean, that could obviously lead to a kind of win-lose situation where you might win from reducing your alcohol intake or indeed going completely teetotal. But then, of course, if you're taking in sugar, maybe all those benefits are lost.
Look, I think reducing your alcohol or cutting out alcohol is definitely going to have some really positive impacts on, you know, your life and your sleep as well. But I think, you know, definitely when you're reducing something, which, you know, alcohol does have a lot of sugar in, it can be quite difficult. And it means that often that you've got these withdrawals from it. So making like simple swaps by swapping your alcohol maybe for a kombucha or a fizzy, you know, a fizzy water or some herbal teas or something like that, just to have an alternative is really good. And then obviously trying to nourish your body. So looking at your plate, whether that's your lunch or your dinner, and trying to make half your plate vegetables, lots of different colours, and, you know, maybe a quarter of that plate some quality protein, and then a quarter of the plate, you know, your carbohydrates, whether that's like rice or, you know, lentils or sweet potato, and having that balance and maybe some healthy fats on top with some olive oil or nuts and seeds. This is going to be a really good way of balancing your plate, not getting those dips, feeling fuller for longer, and much less likely to reach for the sugar.
I was interested you mentioned taking water, and indeed you suggest in some of your top tips drinking 2 to 3 litres of water a day from that point of view. That's something I think often people don't think about. And of course, the danger would be, well, I don't have water, but I have a nice big fizzy drink by my desk, etc. Not a good idea, but water would be, presumably.
Definitely. I think water is definitely the best drink that we can drink. And I think especially in the morning when you wake up, that's when you're most dehydrated. So try and drink at least a pint of water, if not 1.5 pints, to really hydrate your body. And I think try and, you know, if you sit at a desk, have a big bottle of water right in front of you. So it's just there to remind you to keep drinking your water. And then, you know, get lots of nice herbal teas that you love to drink and, like, you know, dig into them throughout the day. But I think, yes, so many people aren't drinking enough water, and this is definitely something that we all need to work into. And it's just habit, you know, the minute we get into the right habit and we're doing it more regularly, the easier it is.
And are there alternatives to sugar? I mean, we've heard over the last year or so that maybe some of those supposed sugar supplements are not necessarily as good for us as we first thought they might have been.
Absolutely, yeah, there has been a lot of research. A lot of things, like with artificial sweeteners, is, you know, in high doses. So in very small amounts, it is okay. But I prefer to use natural sweeteners, things like stevia and erythritol, to sweeten things. They're a really good alternative that don't have the same side effects. And then also, you know, using things like cinnamon or vanilla to sweeten your porridge or, you know, your recipes. And then you know, things like eating fruit. So obviously that does have sugar in it, but it has a good amount of fiber in it, which reduces that blood sugar level spike. And also it's really nutrient packed. So if you're going to get your kind of sweetness from somewhere, that would be a really great place to start.
We often say when talking about diets or indeed changing habits in any way, shape or form that it needs to be for life, not just for the holidays. Is it important to actually ensure that if we do occasionally feel as though we're slipping off the health bandwagon, we don't beat ourselves up and say, that's it, it's all over, I'm finished. It's the third week in January. I can't cope anymore. I'm back on the sugar.
I'm so glad you asked that question because that comes up time and time again for me. You know, I had a big night out, I had a kebab, everything's ruined. And it's just not the way your body works. You know, it is about what you do every day consistently. And just because you had one big kind of binge, that doesn't eradicate all the great work, all the kind of salads that you've been eating that week, all the movement that you've done that week. That's just not how it works. So if you do, that's absolutely fine. Just say to yourself, I'm human. This is just part of life, and crack on the next day. Get back onto the boiled eggs and avocado for breakfast the next day and moving your body and meditating and looking after yourself. You know, I really think that you've got to be kind to yourself and be your biggest cheerleader. And we can be really hard on ourselves. But absolutely, if you, you know, inverted commas, slip up during January and have a drink or have a chocolate, that's absolutely fine. That doesn't eradicate things. Just be kind to yourself and get back on it. I think that's, you know, so key. And I'm a big believer in that real 360 approach to health and wellness. And I have a platform called The Glow Space, which has movement, meditations and meal plans. And this is a really great space to, you know, bring wellness into your home, make it a habit. You know, I was finding I was never exercising. So, you know, exercising at home has been really helpful for me, and meal planning as well. So prepping on a Sunday, you know, batch cooking some things that you pop in the freezer or you pop in the fridge, and then you've got your kind of fridge, freezer, cupboards stacked full of healthy food ready to go.
The classic 4M diet, you might say, Madeline's movement, meditation, and what was the fourth M? I forgot. Meal planning, exactly. Of course, there you go. All in place. And just to remind us once again, Madeline, where can people actually follow your good selves on the social media and such like? How can people find out more information about your tips to ditch the sugar addiction?
So I'm on Instagram at Madeline_Shaw_, and then I have my platform called The Glow Space. And then you can also find out about the research done by the Kombucha Brand Remedy at remedydrinks.co.uk.
Madeline, it's been awesome connecting with your good self as ever. We'll start to speak again in the not too distant future. For the moment, though, have a great January and keep on keeping on.
You too. Thank you so much for having me.
Drifting and searching, shifting from town to town. Every time I'd slip and slide a little further down. I can't blame you if you won't take me back after everything I put you through. But honey, you're my last hope, and who else can I turn to? Was the sweet love.
out of you. Here I am a million miles from home. The Indiana wind and rain cut through me. I'm lost and alone, chilled to the bone. Silver lady,
certainly. Thanks to our two nutritionists there, Madeline and Rebecca, for setting us right on what to actually do in terms of eating stuff, etc. And of course, you couldn't fail to recognize, presumably, the classic from 1977, Silver Lady, which brings us round to, of course, the first of several departures that we've seen recently. We've had Keith Lamb, of course, the erstwhile chief executive of Middlesbrough Football Club, who passed after a short illness. We also, of course, have recently heard Cindy Morgan, of course, much beloved actress from the era of Tron and Bring Him Back Alive and so on. Also passed age 69. David Sowell, well, of course, he made it till 1980, probably best known for Starsky and Hutch in this country, but obviously for his music as well as a number of other key things, and indeed was a citizen of the UK for quite some time. A citizen who was born in South Africa, who's also past age 100, is Glynis Johns. And obviously we turn now to Richard Fitzwilliams to talk a bit more about Glynis Johns, who probably, again, was not necessarily viewed in the same light as David Sowell or indeed Cindy Morgan or indeed Keith Lamb, but at the same time is probably sharing some thoughts with them in the next level of transcendence.
Well, I certainly think that Glynis Johns, I mean, she had an amazing career and lasted over decades, but she would became, I think, immortal, not for being nominated for an Oscar for The Sundowners, or indeed, perhaps, I mean, those who know the little light music on stage would be interested that apparently Sondheim wrote Send in the Clowns for Glynis Johns, and that was the highlight of her career. But what people remember is the as the suffragette, the wife of Mr. Banks, Winifred in Mary Poppins. She was absolutely marvelous. She did a splendid song, Sister Suffragette, and this was, I think, the image of her that went worldwide and still remembers. So it's a shame, in fact, that perhaps she wasn't made a dame, as apparently someone had been suggesting. But certainly quite a career and quite an innings. And Mary Poppins is my particularly fond memory of her. She lost out to Elizabeth Taylor in the film of A Little Light Music.
Still not a patch on going in with my eyes open, or indeed Hooray for Hollywood, just some of the classic David Sowell numbers that he actually had produced for the whole thing. Although I suspect it's probably only yourself, Richard, and myself who actually even recall David Sowell. Natasha Wanton in Australia, David Sowell, Starsky and Hutch, any kind of resonance whatsoever? Or is it a case of, no, I just remember him from the episode of Star Trek entitled The Apple?
I probably wouldn't have been able to pick him out unless I sort of had him pointed out to me. However, I was talking to my father earlier today and he was talking about him. And I think the thing that struck him the most about David Sowell was the fact that he could sing and sing really well. And and that always really surprised my dad. And I think that's his memory that stuck with him is actually more his music than his acting, which is quite interesting. If you consider how someone wants to be remembered.
Well, certainly he was at a time where it was fashionable for TV stars and TV detective series. For instance, Telly Savalas as Kojak also had a somewhat interesting venture into singing. But David Sowell, of course, started off as a singer. He actually captured the notion of being the man in the ski mask. In fact, he wore a ski mask so he wouldn't actually be identified when he sang on stage. So very much prefiguring the days of the Masked Singer by a good three decades. I know Phil Leonard's not a fan of David Searle because obviously he did have issues with one of his wives in terms of violence and various other factors, but that was clear as well in latter years. And certainly for certain generations, David Searle, possibly your father as well, Natasha, was the epitome of cool masculinity in terms of the Starsky and Hutch series. I wonder, Anna Koskinen, any notion of Starsky and Hutch in Romania, or was it just a case of no, never heard of David Searle at all?
Yes, I know him and I know Starsky and Hutch. And we had different channels where we had only British and American TV series all the time, so I know them from there. And I really watched them. I think there are three or four seasons. I'm
four
not
seasons.
Sure, but
yeah.
Four seasons, yeah. I watched them all the time with my mom, those and other series, and I like them a lot.
Which is why you're one of the key participants in Residence Rewind, of course, which is great. So Starsky and Hutch, no, there. What about the Netherlands? Via van den Bogert, David Searle in the Netherlands, or is it a case of no? We obviously related more to Glynis Johns and her suffragette song from the Mary Poppins era.
Personally, yes. I'm not sure how it is in the Netherlands, but I hadn't heard of him before. But I did. I mean, I did. I mean, it wasn't in the news that Glynis died, so. We know.
And Cindy Morgan, as we said, and Keith Lamb. Sarah Huntley, again, I suspect you might have been a David Searle fan, or were you more Paul Michael Glaser and Starsky, or was it neither?
Neither, actually, but I did love what they did. I loved Don't Give Up. Was the song
Don't Give Up on Us, Baby?
Yeah, I love that song. Who knows, we could have come this far. Yeah. I think he was a very interesting character, David Searle, actually.
And of course, as we say, lived in Britain for the last few years of his life as well, from that point of view, when he wasn't actually appearing on stage in the West End in a quintessential take on a Jerry. Exactly. Which I think was often sort of touted as being one of his stage pinnacles from that point of view. I know, Natasha, you're very keen to find out what Richard's going to make of Wonka, but we're going to hold fire on that because deferred gratification is the way forward.
Can we do the Globes briefly, Alex?
No, because I want to actually jump straight into a casting line, which clearly, Sarah, you'll appreciate the importance of this insofar as we now actually have a situation where in Hollywood, clearly the only way you can actually get roles is if your name suits that particular role. So why not actually cast an actor called Driver for a movie called Ferrari? I mean, it makes perfect sense with a co-star called Cruz as his wife, Laura Ferrari. Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz, clearly Michael Mann, known for his subtleties of filmmaking in so many ways, such as Heat and such like, has taken the Ferrari story with Adam Driver. Over to you, Richard.
Yes, indeed. And I was looking forward to this film because, as you mentioned, Michael Mann is director. And some of his films, Last of the Mohicans, Collateral, Heat, I mean, these are, I thought, extremely good. And this is a biopic of Enzo Ferrari set in the 1950s, set in 1957 to be precise. So the war is still, it's haunting the actual action because it's during the war that Enzo acquires a mistress played by Shailene Woodley, Lena, and he has a son by this mistress, Piero. Now, most of this movie concentrates on his private life, but the theme, cleverly, and I think it's certainly well enough brought in from time to time, obviously, is the fact that he is the head of Ferrari. Ferrari there's a danger of it going bankrupt, and there is a race, the Mille Miglia, which is a particularly extraordinary race that he's going to enter Ferrari in, that he's absolutely got to win, as his competitors feel exactly the same way. But the complex personal life, he and Laura, his wife, played by Penelope Cruz, they're co-owners of Ferrari. Observe the complexity if you fall out with your well, co-owner at a time of crisis, indeed crisis for his personal life, because appears a decision has to be made with Lena as to what name Pyrrha is going to take. And we, from the very beginning in this movie, you can see the regret that he and Laura are living with because of the tragic loss of their much-loved son, Dino. The ingredients in this movie are mixed up, I thought, rather well. The prosthetics are amazing. Adam Driver does indeed look
like a driver.
Time to time, he does look as presumably Enzo Ferrari must have. Certainly, it is quite extraordinary. The skull cap, the wig, the neck prosthetics, they are rather amazing. It's a good performance. The film, for me, was dominated by Penelope Cruz because she's the only person in Medina, where much of the action's set, who doesn't know that he has a son by Lena Pyrrha, who I've mentioned, and indeed what happens when this is discovered, and what happens as well when it's discovered in a particularly pivotal moment for the business. One of the faults of this movie is that it is filmed rather much in the dark, and they're trying to create some sort of realism in the 1950s, and I simply felt that this didn't work so well. But it's dramatic, it's very well acted by all concerned, and it certainly held my interest. It's not a great film, but it's a very competent, extremely well performed, well-scripted film, and the Mille Miglia, what happens there, I didn't know the story, and there must be no spoilers, but it's quite a movie, and Michael Mann hasn't disappointed, much as David Fincher, say, didn't with The Killer, which we discussed a few weeks ago, and I would recommend the film.
Natasha Wanton, given the well-worn phrase that suggested you can actually measure certain aspects of maleness against their fondness for size of cars and redness of cars as well, any thoughts on Ferrari from your own point of view? Is it a case of no? We'd much rather go transgender and do a feature on, I don't know, Kia.
I have a Kia. It's a beautiful little car.
I agree. And so do I, Natasha. There we are. We share that across the oceans, basically. Mine's a Kia Picanto. See, car names. Picanto actually translates, so I was told by Cathy Manso, as with a little spice, which I suppose actually sums up the driver as well to a certain extent. But there we are.
Here we are. You know, it's a nice city car. I personally, this film doesn't massively appeal to me. I'm not really big on my. It's
Adam
a
Driver's
movie. It's a historical movie, so from that aspect I could see, from that social historical aspect, it would be interesting, but I don't think I'm particularly the target audience. My father-in-law is very interested in this movie. He follows quite a lot of the motor car racing, so I think this would be something that he would probably be quite interested in, but yeah, it's probably not what I'm going to rush to the cinema to view, unfortunately.
Historical as opposed to hysterical, depending on the acting of Adam Driver, of course, anything could be actually open to the whole system. Of course, he's basically getting in touch with his Latin roots. Sarah Huntley, Italy, and the whole notion of memento vivere, as Pamela Suman would say if we were doing a version of her Italian-based series and theme series, Reasons to Live as opposed to Memento Mori, which is, of course, Reasons to Die, or indeed a memorable side of things there. Ferrari, is that for yourself? I mean, you're quite a whiz behind
the
wheel.
You see, in this
wheel.
Household, it's very much one that Mr. Britton wants to go and see, and he said, oh, you won't want to go and see it, I'll go on my own. But actually, having listened to you all now, I think I could go and see it. And I'm intrigued.
Of course you can, Sarah. You should never actually just listen to your husband when he says you shouldn't go to see this. You know, sort of fight.
To be fair, he said, it's not probably not what you want to go and see. I'll go and see it. And I said, oh, right, okay. No, I think I probably will. I'm always intrigued by the backstory of people's personal lives with all these things, and Richard's whetted my appetite there, so I think I probably will. Yes.
Yeah, there we are. Anna, Teodora, Koskinol, is this one for you?
Well, I don't know if this particular movie, but I've been watching racing a bit, and to be honest, I do want Ferrari to win, but it wasn't the best season for them this year as well, unfortunately. I know that every Ferrari fan is like right now crying probably while falling asleep, but I think it's an interesting movie. I don't know if I'm gonna watch it soon enough, but Natasha said it's more of a historical one with their history. I think it's interesting to see where they left off and where they started and what was their journey. But I'm not sure right now. But it does sound interesting.
A race to immortality, one might well say, in terms of the whole system.
To yeah, immortality, considering they haven't won in God knows how many months. But yeah, sure.
Ironic. Yeah, there we are. You see, that's what happens. Michael Mann, big on irony from that point of view. If he'd actually done Red Bull or search for a search for wings, or indeed McLaren, perhaps you might have had a greater sort of success on the whole thing. Nevertheless, Via van den Bogaert, any thoughts from yourself in the Netherlands?
So just recently, I was forced to watch Formula One because of Max Verstappen, of course, and I've started liking it. At first, I didn't think I would, but now I really like McLaren, and I think I would watch this movie because well, but this was a very scary time for Ferrari because they were heading to work towards bankruptcy, and I think the and I think it's very interesting to learn about how they went on and how and now Ferrari, I mean, they don't win a lot, but they are still here. So it's very interesting to see how at that point that it was such a scary point, and now they're still here.
And the
I
other
do think
side,
that they're still here because of their history, mostly because they had Schumacher, which made history for them for the next 100 or 200 years. So thanks to him, they're still here because otherwise, I don't know, these past three seasons have been so sad, so sad.
disastrous,
Christopher's
nevertheless.
dimension in the movie is, as I say, on his private life. But obviously, the business in it and what happens in the Mille Miglia, this is, of course, very dramatic, too.
8 out of 10, is that what you're going for this, Richard?
Eight, Alex,
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. Had a feeling that was going to be the case. Okay, we'll go fully immersive for the next sort of sequence, certainly with the original, and some might still say better version of course, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and the whole essence of relating to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the Roald Dahl number. We know last week, of course, that Natasha rated this extremely highly in terms of the sequence, in terms of how it was actually perceived, etc. But in terms of our Oompa Loompa-ness, where is Richard going to actually go for this? Richard, would you like to actually share, put you front and center here in terms of the whole system? What's your view of Wonka, this particular wonderful music?
The image in front of me, I have to say, Alex, is quite something, even by your standards. This is it's a musical fantasy film, which Natasha did indeed give an extremely good review to recently. And yes, I just to remind everyone, Wonka is a character in Roald Dahl's 1964 Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and this was adapted, of course, memorably for Gene Wilder. This is this particular version, directed by Paul King. It has Timothée Chalamet as Willy Wonka, and certainly it's an amazing. It is amazing. I have to say, this is not particularly my sort of movie. Having said that, the songs, the score, it's a colourful crowd pleaser, and it's got an all-star cast. My goodness, there are lots of stars in it. Wonka arrives in a sort of, it's a 19th century, I sort of mix, I suppose, between London and Paris and Prague, Europe. It's a sort of, it's all a, it's a creation, and he wants to establish his chocolate shop at the Galerie Gourmet. He's coerced to stay at Mrs. Sembit, played by Olivia Colman's, boarding house by her monstrous aide Bleacher, and unwisely, because he's illiterate, signs a contract, despite being warned by Orphan Noodle, played by Calla Lane, that there's more to it in the small print, and the contract introduces him to others in Mrs. Sembit's horrifying boarding house, who basically become convicts. They are contracted to become virtual slaves for her. Well, he tells Noodle of his affinity for chocolate. It comes from his late mother, played by Sally Hawkins, and mentions also the theft of his chocolates by an enigmatic orange man, of which more anon. The Oompa Loompa, played by Hugh Grant, and we get the backstory for that. Lofty is Hugh Grant, and it's certainly one of the colourful features of this movie, which is very colourful indeed. It's when he opens a store, there are a variety of competitors who want to sabotage at the store, and indeed with collaboration with the chief of police. And how also do you manage to poison chocolate? And what happens to those who are unfortunate enough to be poisoned? And the facts are that it's a sort of cornucopia of colourful fun, I think we could call it. Timothée Chalamet seems to me ideally cast as Wonka. Carla Lane is charming as Noodle, and there are a whole host, from Rowan Atkinson as the corrupt Father Julius, underneath whose church there are mountains of chocolate, which the cartel, who want to close Wonka down, own and indeed exploit. And then there's Jim Carter from Downton, who's Abacus Crunch, who is also trapped in the terrifying shop of Mrs. Sembit. Colourful, quirky, often saccharine, rather too much chocolate for me, but whether you have giraffes in churches or whether you have levitating humans when they've been eating Wonka's amazing chocolate, this is a fantasy experience for those who like this sort of thing, which are the sort of people who unquestionably will go and see it and maybe return.
He's not going to go over your nine, Natasha. I can tell you that. It might be an eight, but he's not going to go nine. He might even be a seven, but I think it's an eight overall. Sarah Huntley, is this one for yourself, or is it a case of I've outgrown the joys of Roald Dahl?
Oh no, I could never outgrow Roald Dahl. In fact, I've been watching Tales of the Unexpected recently when I've been doing jobs around the house and got that on. No, I think it's fascinating, and I agree with Natasha because actually, Mr. Wonka isn't as a character that nice at times.
Like Mr. Ferrari, really, except with chocolate.
When you read the books, I mean, he's not your natural sort of avuncular figure at all, and represents people standing up to do their bit to him, really, don't they? So I find this film very interesting, and I want to go and see it because I'm intrigued by the what the film's about, is how Mr. Wonka came to be Mr. Wonka, really. So I think it's fascinating, and it sounds a little bit like they've borrowed a bit of the script or plot from oh God, The Best Spies in
Ferrari?
London. No. What's the musical? These are the best pies in London. The musical.
We'll come back to you, Sarah. I'm sure it'll actually
On that one.
emerge.
But no, I actually think it's very a very good idea to form a film on why Mr. Wonka became Mr. Wonka and why he came up with what he did. And I think it will be fascinating. I'd like to see Hugh Grant in this role as well. I think that would be very, he seems to be really in his latter years going for very unglamorous roles, which I think is fascinating.
An orange roll more than an unglamorous one, Sarah.
Well,
An orange
I have the
roll.
privilege of working with the chief Oompa Loompa from the film, with Dean Wilkinson when we did Bad Penny.
Yes, yes.
Dusty, Rusty, Rusty Gough, Rusty Gough. That was it. I'm definitely going to go, but I'm intrigued to know what the score is going to be. But
It will be eight. Alex again intimated it. The score is eight. I mean, as I say, it hadn't wasn't or isn't my particular
Not enough Harry Potter in there, you see.
Oh,
Put
I
in some
like.
Harry Potter, I'd be there all the way.
Oh, Harry Potter, I did love. Yes, that's absolutely true. But no, it is a very, very colourful, imaginative mix. And as Natasha described, and also that it's got a huge audience, it's making a lot of money, I'm glad to say.
Thea, I appreciate from your own perspective, you still can't understand why Richard has apparently flatly refused to actually review how the Hunger Games became the Hunger
I
Games and the
ha
Hunger Games
objection.
prequel.
I must object, Alex. It's on for next week. There've been a lot of
Oh,
films.
yeah. Well, I
I'm
mean,
very glad.
obviously he had bias to the Australian contributor from that point of view, but what about yourself and Wonka, Fia? Is it one for yourself, or is it a case of we prefer Belgium chocolate and other chocolate forms can stay away from us? Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, of course, we prefer Dutch chocolate, but no, I grew up with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So, and then we just saw a small glimpse of how his life as a Wonka began, and now you really get a movie that shows how he built the factory and everything. And I really would love to watch it because it also introduces the character to a whole new generation of young people. So yes, I'm very
And
eager to watch it.
clearly, just as we need to have many movies explaining how Peter Parker became Spider-Man and how Mr. Wayne became Bruce Wayne, multimillionaire, clearly you can never get enough of the origin stories.
Yeah.
Anna,
And
what
of
about
course, how
yourself?
you know who how President Snow became President Snow, which we'll be discussing next week.
No, we will. I apologize for the delay, but we've had the festive season and so forth, and Wonka, I thought it was one that we'd want to discuss, and probably I hope Alex will allow a brief comment about the Golden Globes too.
Possibly not. Anna, in terms of yourself and Wonka, is this one for you?
Well, as I said last time, I in love with every story from Roald Dahl. So of course nobody's too old to watch them. Particularly, I'm not very fond of Timothée Chalamet. I don't know why, but I am not. But you all said he did such an amazing job on this movie, so I'll just watch it. And of course, we said about Hugh Grant and Rowan Atkinson, which are really good actors, and I did watch many movies with them, so I'll be happy to see them, even if they're orange, as you said. But what I think is better is that kids nowadays don't really watch old movies, so I'm not sure many of them know about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the old movie, not the new one, and the old remake of Willy Wonka. So I think many of them will start watching now. And there are so many movies. I think maybe this is an exception because so many old stories and movies are being remade this year and in the next few years. And I don't think it's such a good idea because when they were done a few years ago, we didn't have so many people, as we said last week, offended about so many stuff. And we were able to portray them exactly as they were and exactly as the stories were written. Whereas nowadays, we are afraid to have, I don't know, maybe dwarfs or people that eat too much chocolate and turn purple. We don't know, and you never know what to expect.
These are
So
huge
I
issues,
think
Anna. Huge issues. And as we said, sometimes we have
they
to be very
really are.
careful. Allowing for the
They
fact
really
that,
are.
Jodie Foster this very week has been criticizing Generation Z people on the grounds of basically not connecting is as fully and being as professional as, I mean, when Jodie sort of speaks, clearly it's important. It is important, of course, 2024, because we have a number of folk reaching milestones. Keanu Reeves turns 60. 60. I know it's inconceivable that anybody could actually reach that awesome 6 decades. I mean, frankly, I find that quite astonishing that people can exist on that sort of basis. But also, Alexander Defafor Boris Johnson also turned 60 as well. So, Richard, I'm sure you'll be looking forward to some sort of awards for Mr. Defafor when he actually changes his name to Defafor once again from Boris, which, of course, was his second name, not his first name Alexandra, and also turning 60. I mean, it's just, I realize, Richard, as a 43-year-old, you find it inconceivable that, 60 is ever going to be reached. But, there we
It
have
won't, man. It won't. No. Can't
There you
even discussing it, I think, is perhaps.
Phenomenal. Exactly. And Sarah's just 28. So, but that sort of basis, we just don't know where life happens to be. And Natasha, of course, at 105 is still going strong and will outlive us all on that sort of basis, which is important. You've got 2 minutes to talk about Golden Globes, Richard. Off you go.
Well, yes, absolutely. The change ceremony beginning 80 years ago, Hollywood Foreign Press Association's now been disbanded, and the revamped Globes have got 300 more diverse voting members worldwide at the Beverly Hilton Tonight, shown on CBS, host Jimmy Coy, and a great deal of interest on whether they could get back most or almost all of the 20 million who used to watch it, and centering, I think, on Oppenheimer, Barbie, Maestro, and also Poor Things. So best actor drama, it looks like Bradley Cooper, Maestro from Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer. Best actress drama, Lily Gladstone, very touching in Killers of the Flower Moon, over Carey Mulligan from Maestro. Best film for drama looks like Oppenheimer from The Killers of the Flower Moon, and also best film comedy or musical, I think perhaps Poor Things from Barbie. Now that could be very, very close and very thrilling. The new category for cinematic achievement, they think Taylor Swift, the Eras Tour, which was so tremendously successful, will win. And certainly best actor, comedy and musical will be Paul Giamatti from The Holdovers, which we will come to. I've just seen it. And best actress, probably, as opposed to Margot Robbie and Barbie, I think it'll be Emma Stone in Poor Things. We'll have to
Yes, you're
see.
obsessed with Poor Things, Richard. Just put it to one side, okay?
No, well,
You can have that Frankenstein thing and just leave it to another side entirely, okay?
best director Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. That does seem pretty certain, and also he may lead him to his first Oscar. Best supporting actor, probably Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer. Best supporting actress, Divine Joy Randolph seems a cert for The Holdovers. I think best foreign language film, it's a duel between Anatomy of a Fall and Past Lives. I think it'll be Anatomy of a Fall. Quite happy to be proven wrong there. And television series, certainly Succession, which I've seen a lot of and greatly admire. So yes, I hope it's a triumph tonight. It's the important thing is the number of people who watch, because award ceremonies, we've been over this before, does have a lot of trouble in attracting them. But
Richard, unfortunately, it's not really diverse. I mean, there is not a single Oompa Loompa that's actually going to be either presenting, hosting, or indeed doing anything, as far as I can see in the awards. And if you actually have anything which claims to actually have diversity and no Oompa Loompas in there, frankly, I find it, just shocking in extremis. Sarah, the listener to this particular sequence of the Madrid Drive Live might have already, well, they know the result of the Golden Globes because it'll already have been happened from that point of view. But Sarah, will you be watching?
No, I don't think I will be,
No,
actually, to be
yeah.
quite frank.
Well said,
No.
Sarah Huntley. Well said indeed. I
Alex,
also.
I must object and protest. You want people not to watch. The facts are we couldn't because of the way CBS, unless you can get it on Paramount or something. But I mean, you surely want people to watch film awards.
I think the trinket giving has actually reached a stage where actually we just don't need to consider it anymore. Anna, will you be keen to watch the Golden Globes, or is it a case of, I don't know?
Unfortunately, I have a very big project due on Tuesdays.
Absolutely,
No.
indeed so. And we've got another Madrid Drive Live coming up on Wednesday. I mean, in the Netherlands, presumably, fear it's a case of, why would we bother with an awards ceremony that's got no interest for us whatsoever?
I feel like the correct answer is yes, you are right, Alex. I will not disagree with you. But I mean, I do agree with Richard that even if you would want to watch it, it's very difficult to even watch it in a different country other than the US. And also, I don't really watch a lot of award See, I don't really watch the
Exactly,
Golden Globes,
exactly.
and
And
yeah.
Natasha, is it a case of in Australia, obviously you'll be moving heaven and earth to fly the flag for Christopher Nolan, and your hopes possibly to be dashed, it has to be said, that he will pick up Best Director.
I am going to be very interested in this. I want Oppenheimer to do well. Everybody knows. You heard my little rant a couple of weeks ago. I'm Team Oppenheimer. Come on, Oppenheimer. Woo! I think the
But not poor
Australian audience,
things.
though, I've not heard a lot about, no, not Poor Things. I've not heard a lot about it being kind of big out here in Australia. I think everyone's kind of talking about soon to be Tassie Queen at the minute. So that's been all over the news with the Danish royals. So that's
Well,
kind
as
of
I say,
important.
I'm quite frankly, amazed Richard managed to get through the whole piece without talking about the stepping down of the
Oh, Queen
Danish
Margaret,
Queen.
I would be happy to do that, Alex. Absolutely happy as to why she stepped down, whether it her back, whether it her age, or a mixture of both. That could it have been something to do with Crown Prince Frederick's behaviour? I've actually been doing quite a lot on this, so I may suggest we resume next week and discuss that as
Well,
well as the Hunger Games.
there you go. That could be a strong possibility, particularly as we add on the notion that, thank the Lord, Andrew is back. Welcome into the fold again of
Oh,
the royal family.
Alex,
Hurrah,
you're
hurrah once
squeezing me
again.
to it. Alex, you're squeezing me to levels you know perfectly well I can't cope with.
Just embrace your inner Oompa Loompa. It worked for Hugh Grant. I'm sure it could work for yourself, Richard. For the moment, to Sarah Huntley, to Anna Teodora Coscarnell, to Fia van den Bogaert, to Natasha Wanton, and Richard Fitzwilliams, many thanks. And keep watching those movies. Here's David Soul.
Choose a moment.